Coming up on Tech News Today, email services shut down because of spies, piracy better than an Emmy, and BlackBerry's almost out of options. What's their last one? We'll tell you next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 9th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT8. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world and put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. LavaBit, the encrypted email service used by former U.S. intelligence agent Edward Snowden, has suspended its service. Owner and operator Ladar Levison said otherwise he would, quote, become complicit in crimes against the American people. He will fight in court for the right to speak about why. In response, encrypted communications company Silent Circle also closed its encrypted email service, saying email cannot be properly protected. Silent Circle's encrypted voice and text services will remain available.
U.S. President Barack Obama met with a number of tech figures like Apple CEO Tim Cook, AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson, and Google computer scientist Vint Cerf yesterday to discuss the future of technology and surveillance, sources tell Politico. The secretive meetings focused on the NSA controversy, as well as the online tracking of consumer behaviors and patterns. Through the now high-profile projects such as PRISM, the government now collects up to 3 billion pieces of information, intelligence from U.S. computer networks in a single month, and indexes almost 100 billion pieces of data worldwide.
Geek.com says that Google's got a new Nexus 10 in the pipeline, but Google would be switching manufacturers from Samsung to ASUS. ASUS already makes the Google Nexus 7. There's also a message on Google Plus by Android and Me founder Taylor Wimberly that says Motorola will be producing the next Nexus phone for Google. It wouldn't be a rebranded Moto X, but a brand new model of phone. That news is in opposition to reports that LG is working on a new Nexus phone based on the G2.
Maybe they all can. Just Nexus for Nexi. Nexi? I don't know. Reuters reports sources say BlackBerry is considering taking the company private in order to fix problems away from public pressure. One of the sources is quoted as saying there is a change of tone in the board. The company has also reportedly considered licensing its software to other phone makers. BlackBerry just won U.S. Department of Defense approval for its Z10 or Z10 and Q10 phones.
Roku's jumping off the set-top box and into the App Store. Or maybe more like cloning itself. The company introduced the Play on Roku feature, which broadcasts still images and music from mobile devices to its set-top box last year. Now, its iOS app has launched video support. It's currently available only for user-recorded videos, and you'll need some of Roku's second-generation or newer hardware to take advantage of these features.
Apple's lawyers are going to be busy. The company's dealing with three different legal venues today. First up, Apple's waiting on a decision by the U.S. ITC. Apple claims that Samsung infringed on four Apple patents. Next up in New York, Apple awaits a federal judge's opinion on Apple's proposed remedies in that whole ebook price-fixing case. And finally, there's Apple at the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, where the court will review a ruling by a lower court that said Samsung violated several Apple mobile patents, where Samsung was ordered to pay $450 million to Apple, and then appealed.
Ooh, hat trick. Nice job, Apple. Remember those MIT students at DEF CON who showed us how to use a scanner and a 3D printer to make copies of any key? Well, a company called Kimi has turned that basic concept into a business plan. The company's iOS app lets you take a picture of your key and store it in the cloud. You can then use the app to have any locksmith make you a copy of your key or order keys directly from Kimi for $5 to $7 a piece. Best part, the NSA now has copies of all your keys in case you lose them. Just kidding. Not kidding.
Google has added 79 patents to its list of pledges not to sue any user or distributor or developer of open source software unless it's used defensively. The new patents cover software used to operate data centers, including middleware, distributed storage, database management, alarm monitoring, kind of everything. Back in March, Google had announced its open patent non-assertion pledge to, quote, encourage pro-competitive defensive uses of patents to support open source innovation.
I'm moving to Korea.
So long.
Yep. Civilization Online, the massively multiplayer version of the popular world-building game, will launch in Korea only. Massively, reports the 2K Games PR manager Brian Roundy said there is no North American release planned at this time. And faster internet in Korea anyway. And Bulgogi.
Apparently, the RT in Windows RT stands for Redmond Turd, because ASUS announced it will no longer make any devices running Windows RT and instead focus on Windows 8 devices running on x86 processors. The news comes from ASUS CEO Jerry Shen speaking to the Wall Street Journal. The decision to continue with Windows 8 was due to the system's backward compatibility with almost every Windows program ever.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. where you will find the perfect image or video for your next creative project. This afternoon, I'm going to be publishing a new episode of It's a Thing, and I'm going to be looking for some kind of weird, like, trendy, like, how do I combine bespoke and kale in one image? Shutterstock is where I'm going to go to make that happen. They have contributors from all over the world, professional photographers. They review each image individually for quality, and yet they still somehow manage to add 10,000 images a day. So there's always something new. But the best part for me is the search engine. I can drill down by subject, by asset type, by gender, by emotion. You can even sort by color spectrum. If you're like, really think something looks, needs to look red, you can go by a particular kind of red or green. Whatever you want. Shareable light boxes, too. So I can throw it in the light box and say, hey, does this look like a good image for this? People can share and add other alternatives. And an award-winning iPad app. Search on the go. If I'm out and about, I can still find my images at Shutterstock.com. You can try it today. You sign up for a free account. I don't even give them any credit card information or anything. Just sign up for the account. Begin using Shutterstock. Maybe put some stuff together for a project. Put it in a light box. Share it with some coworkers, some collaborators. And once you decide to purchase, use the offer code TNT8 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 30% off new accounts. Use the offer code TNT8. We thank Shutterstock for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Show them your support. Go check them out today. All right. Joining us today, as usual on a Friday, Len Peralta, our own political cartoonist. He illustrates the stories as we go along. By the way, congratulations on the funding of the Jawbone Radio Kickstarter.
Oh, thank you so much. I owe the chat room here at Tech News Today lots. So 10 more shows of Jawbone Radio, hopefully, if we can keep it going until Sunday. So thank you, everybody.
So if you're watching the video live or even on demand, you'll be able to see Len's illustrations as we go along. You can also go to lenperalta.com. What's the bit.ly link, Ayaz? It's bit.ly/twitlen.
That's correct.
Twitlen. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to just the stuff that he's drawn and made available on the internets. Also joining us to talk about the stories of the day, Julio Ojeda Zapata, tech writer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Good to have you back on the show, Julio.
Good. And I'm really excited to be on with Len because he once did a likeness of me.
Ah, wow. There's two of you now. Check that out. Ooh,
that's right. Awesome.
That's awesome. All right, let's get in talking about that Snowden story. So LavaBit owner and operator Ladar Levinson, we heard a little bit of his quote, said, "This experience has taught me one very important lesson. Without congressional action or a strong judicial precedent, I would strongly recommend against anyone trusting their private data to a company with physical ties to the United States." He said this after he suspended operations of his LLC. John Callis, the co-founder and tech head for Silent Circle. By the way, the other co-founder there is Phil Zimmerman. He's the guy who made PGP. After they announced that they were going to suspend email, said email as we know it cannot be secure. Email that uses standard internet protocols cannot have the same security guarantees that real-time communications has. Deutsche Telekom has announced that they will start exclusively routing email through domestic servers, a Germany-only service, because of the surveillance. Jennifer Granick, director of civil liberties at the Stanford Law School Center for Internet and Society, wrote an opinion piece about this sort of thing today, saying the U.S. government, in its rush to spy on everybody, may end up killing our most productive industry. LavaBit may be the canary in the coal mine here. And a survey by the U.S.-based Cloud Security Alliance, quoted by Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, found that of those outside the U.S., companies surveyed, that is, 10% had canceled a project with a U.S.-based cloud computing provider, and 56% would be less likely to use a U.S.-based cloud computing service. Now, in the face of all this, President Obama is scheduled to hold a press conference at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern time later today to talk about new transparency measures around the surveillance efforts. But in advance of that, Julio, is this something to worry about? Can the U.S. economy really be damaged by these sorts of concerns, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I see a couple of scenarios where the economy could be damaged. The other thing that could happen is there's a lot of hue and cry about this now, but then it could all settle down. You know, foreign companies could forget about it. The U.S. public could forget about it. I think the more sinister scenario for me is everybody just calming down, forgetting about this, and the United States continuing to ramp up its surveillance technologies. That honestly worries me a lot more than a possible hit on the U.S. economy.
I agree with Julio. I mean, I certainly think that the fact that so much of this has been brought to light, and certainly at least where we live, technology companies being inextricably linked is a good thing in general, as far as everyone knowing a little bit more about how it all works. But just the attention span of outrage is so short these days that, you know, you can point to all sorts of things, you know, SOPA and PIPA and PRISM. And, you know, people get really, really upset about it, and then it's on to the next thing. And even though this is a very potentially serious issue, I find the trend of this to ebb and flow like anything else.
I think the general public might forget about it, but I don't know if businesses will. Because if you're trying to market your goods and services, let's say Apple and iCloud, and you want to market that in China, and China obviously does not want to be spied on by the U.S. constantly, if there are servers that are these services are using, like Google's Android, if they're constantly going back to the U.S. and everything's being is visible to the U.S., that might cause more concern for these companies trying to grow. It might not cause an issue in the U.S. economy so much as these places won't be getting as much revenue from overseas, because other countries might just become paranoid, just like the U.S. is with Huawei. They're like, listen, we're not going to use your stuff because you might have ties. And this is based on, like, you might have ties versus the U.S. government saying, yes, we are watching everything that goes through their servers. So if they want to grow internationally, if these companies want to grow internationally, they might have to do something to kind of distance themselves from the U.S., which could have a larger impact.
And competing companies overseas now have leverage. They now have a great stick to use in their marketing to keep that outrage fervor going, to go to enterprises and say, look, you sure you want to go with Google? Because your data could, you're a foreign company, right? I mean, don't forget, a lot of the controversy is around these surveillance measures applying to United States citizens when they shouldn't. But the law, the actual legal part of this, is they can spy on anyone overseas and do whatever they want with it. That's always been true, but this has really raised the awareness of it. And I think that will become a concern for a lot of companies to say, you know what, maybe we shouldn't trust our data over there. Before, we thought it was overblown, but now that we see all the things that they're doing with it, and they can do whatever they want with our data if it's on a U.S. server. When you see somebody like Deutsche Telekom changing their email service to route it to be German only, I think that's the more disturbing part of this trend than just the fact that U.S. companies are shutting down in the face of surveillance. So there you go. I guess that's it. Let's talk about BlackBerry. Reuters reports that BlackBerry is warming up to the possibility of going private.
Yeah, so its sources are saying that CEO Thorsten Hines and the board are coming around to the idea that taking BlackBerry private would give them some breathing room, because it would take away all the public scrutiny of share prices per day, per quarter, all of that fun stuff. Now, no deal is imminent, and BlackBerry hasn't launched any sale process right now. Now, as a bit of history, at its peak, BlackBerry, back then when it was called RIM, its market share was $84 billion at its peak. Now it's at $4.8 billion. And Reuters brought up the private equity firm Silver Lake as a possible way to get BlackBerry private. Apparently, the Silver Lake has talked to BlackBerry, but not necessarily about a sale. And Silver Lake currently is in that process of trying to take Dell private. That thing's kind of a mess. They seem to be going back and forth. Julio, do you think taking BlackBerry private would change the health of the company? Or is this, like, are public shareholders and that scrutiny really the problem?
This possibly might be a good move because, number one, BlackBerry has fantastic technology. I've been playing with the Z10 and the Q10, and I love the phones. I love the operating system. They've done a really, really good job. But number two, they are running out of time. The clock is ticking. And I think as a public company, they might be doomed. If they go private, that just might buy them the time they need to stick around. I'm rooting for them. There was a time when I completely dismissed BlackBerry. I'm rooting for them now because they have a good product, a product that could be competitive, and I really hope it sticks around.
It seems like going private would just buy BlackBerry some time. When you're a public company, you really don't have things like that. And, you know, RIM and now BlackBerry has had quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And we've said the whole time is, well, they really don't have any more time. And it's like the trend is just not reversing. So you could, it was almost like you could sort of hit pause, say, all right, we're gonna deal with a bunch of stuff internally. We'll come back strong. Gives them a little bit of sense to reassemble in ways that when you do it publicly, yeah, I mean, all you are is scrutinized every step of the way because you've got a bunch of shareholders. So I don't know if this is the right answer, but I think it may be the only answer if BlackBerry needs yet another 6 months or a year roadmap to get back on track.
It puts me in mind of the Washington Post. One of the excuses they gave for selling to Jeff Bezos is they wanted to take the company private. They wanted to get it out of the public eye so they have the maneuverability and the flexibility to try things that the board might not be comfortable with if they're a public stock. But a private owner can give them the green light and say, yeah, go ahead, give it a shot. BlackBerry's in that same situation. They're on the ropes. They need to try things. They need flexibility and maneuverability. When you're a public company, you're restrained on that. So if they want to license BlackBerry OS, there may be board members who are opposed to that. And if they can go to them and say, look, you're opposed to that, we understand, but what if we get you some value out of the company now and take this thing private? And the board members may be agreeable to that. That seems like a smart move to me.
See, I think it's odd because Amazon goes back and forth. They always have this idea of we're going long term. So they could have a bad quarter or two and they can have lots of expansion, not have a ton of profit, but it's at the head, you got Jeff Bezos kind of telling everybody, like, we don't care. We're playing the long-term game. And it seems to be working for Amazon because the first couple of years, they're not making any money. And they eventually become a dominant player in the retail space. And then they start losing money because they start expanding. So if a company like Amazon and Apple is out there constantly being scrutinized and Microsoft's public, all these companies are out there being public and handling this just fine. I don't know if taking this company and having like less public scrutiny is going to change anything internally other than, great, the boardroom is now closed. A lot more stuff becomes secret, so maybe things could change. But I don't know if that's going to make any corporate difference in BlackBerry to the point where it'll change the corporate culture and they'll become really great. If anything, they can make they could be more nimble in theory, or they can make mistakes faster. Either way, this could be I don't know if it'll do a difference.
All right, I poked a little fun at Kimi for their scanning your key and storing it in the cloud in the news fuse, Sarah. But what's going on? This is an interesting service here.
The way that it works is that Kimi is assuming that we're all, losing our keys, needing our friends to have a copy of our keys. It's just something that's happened on a regular enough basis, so we need an app for that. So you store a copy of your key by taking a photo of it on each side within the app. The app walks you through it. And then any locksmith supposedly will be able to create a replica via the snapshots. They've got duplication instructions. There are probably a lot of locksmiths out there who will be like, what? Kimi? Never heard of it. But it's supposed to be easy for them to duplicate. Then you can order duplicate keys by mail. The keys would range from about $5 to $7 a piece and arrive within 2 to 3 days. So this wouldn't really be an immediate solution for anybody who's locked out of their house right then. But this is something that if you were to need something within a week, you could get for a bit of a premium because I think the last time I had a key duplicated, it was like $250. So it's about twice as much. Kimi says, for everybody saying, this is going to be a privacy nightmare. Everyone's going to have each other's keys. We don't store your address information. We temporarily store it while fulfilling mail orders. Then we delete it permanently as it is not stored on any server anywhere. We use advanced levels of encryption and password protection, plus email alerts for all account activities. So if anybody's trying to get a key made for your residents other than you, you would always have a notification. You can send somebody a digital copy of your key if it, there's an event where they need to get into your place. Then they can order through the app or bring to a shop to be made, same as you. The app is free, but if you want to share your key details with someone else, that'll cost $10. Also, depending on the kind of building you may live in, my building uses regular keys, but a friend of mine who I'm always in her building because I'm feeding her cats all the time, she's got like a fob type entry. That obviously isn't supported, at least at this time, although Kimi says, hey, we're working on lots of other different kinds of keys. 70% of the types of keys out there right now are supported by us. I guess I spend a decent amount of time copying keys. I got to be honest, guys. I move a lot. I have friends who are out of town. They like me to go in and, you know, feed their animals or water their plants. So I think this is kind of a fun idea, but I don't know if there's a big enough need. Am I the only one who hangs out at locksmiths regularly?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's the thing. It's like...
Yeah. No, I've never called a locksmith. I'm always one of those guys who's like finds the loose window to get in my own place. And I'm deathly afraid in places that are more secure that I live in now of this. So I don't know if I would do this. I don't know if I would trust it, but I can see the appeal.
I can see it as a backup device. I know how many times you go on a trip and you go, did I forget my house key? This 2-day window would be helpful because you can order it when you're on vacation, grab the key when you get home. At least you didn't lock yourself out. I have been locked out of every house I've ever owned. And every now and then, I think once the window was open and every other time I had to go to a locksmith. Now, that's obviously much more immediate than this kind of thing. But having a backup of any kind is useful because sometimes you end up with a key ring. I've moved a lot in the past couple of years. I have a key ring of, I don't even know what these keys are for at this point. If I could just go this house and this key, get me another copy, that's pretty cool. I even though Kimi's saying this stuff's going to be secure, you know people will freak out no matter what. That if this data and this anonymous data, somebody gets tied to something and they can find your home and have this access to your key, that could freak people out. Although a lot of these locks are very similar. So if you have a little bump kit or anything, you can open these locks. So I don't know how secure locks themselves are in the first place.
I think the main problem with this is that it's not a quick enough turnaround. Usually when you need a key, it's like, oh, crap. Oh, I need a key like in the next 10 minutes. I got to get in here. It's like this whole 2 to 3 days type of a thing is usually how lost keys work.
You could take it to the locksmith and get it faster.
That's what I mean. You've got another option, but then why is Kimi going to make money?
Because they're going to join up with Amazon same day delivery. So get an extra key right now. That same day on a key delivery might be very helpful.
I mean, I can see why it's like, hey, the convenience of having this all within an app and taking photos, kind of like scanning, you know, checks instead of having to go to some ATM place to deposit them. That all sounds great. But, you know, if you have people pay twice as much for a key, how many keys are you really going to be getting ordered? I don't really see this being a huge market need.
This service doesn't make any sense, at least for me, because if I lose my key and I need a key right away, I call Cat Keys in downtown St. Paul. If I'm copying a key at my leisure, I just pick it up, take it to Cat Keys in downtown St. Paul, make a copy. All the scenarios where I conceivably have to make a key are readily satisfied here in the physical world at a lower cost. The service, at least for me, makes absolutely no sense.
I guess the one thing I could think of is the mailing a key to someone coming to visit. So that you can have Kimi make a copy and send it to someone. That way, if they're coming into town and you're like, oh, we'll be there late, or they're watching your house or whatever. Maybe, I'm still not sure that it's worth it.
I can see. I'm lazy. Like, I know I've been in the hardware store. I know I forgot to make that extra key. It's like if I was, as I was leaving, and I probably would use Kimi to be like, all right, fine, just send it to me in 2 days. Because I just kept forgetting to do it. I'll go to the hardware store, buy all kinds of weird gear, and then forget. That's why I was there in the first place, to get a key.
All right. We have more Android game console rumors out there. Game Informer cites unnamed sources saying that by the end of the year, Amazon will deliver a game console running on Android, leveraging titles from the existing Amazon App Store. It will have a dedicated controller, as these things usually do. And Game Informer speculates it could even come integrated into televisions. Game Informer is just coming up with stuff there. That's not actually part of the rumor. But everybody's got an Android game console these days, right? It's all over the place. Julio, can Amazon make the Android game console movement successful? None of these have really seemed to catch fire yet.
Not a gamer, first off, but it seems to me that Android-based game consoles seem like iffy propositions for me because the games that you play on them are basically mobile games. If you blow up a mobile game on your TV, it doesn't look all that great. And the consoles are competing with the likes of the new Xbox, the new PlayStation, and all of that. The consoles my son is crazy about, the graphics are great, everything looks fantastic. I'm not really seeing it, but again, I'm not a gamer.
I can see Amazon making this box a success if gaming is just one element of it. There's that rumored Amazon set-top box. They need a really clean, Amazon-blessed way to get your content on all your Amazon content on your television. I know you can do it through the Roku, you can do it through your smart TVs and lots of different ways, but Amazon doesn't have their own set-top box. And if it's a gaming system as well as a content delivery system, it probably will be quite successful because Amazon has that great way of just saying, look, that this box, if Roku's charging $99 for it, probably Amazon would charge like, what, $40 for it? Because all they care about is selling you more and more content. So the fact that the hardware could be even cheaper than the low-cost Android gaming consoles we've seen, like, ooh, yeah, like $100. If it's possible to make it as cheap as possible, I think Amazon probably will have a winner because even casual gamers are like, yeah, of course I get this box. So that's a Chromecast effect. $30, $40? Yeah, sure. I'll just buy the box.
It's the hot new fashion accessory, according to Kyle Orland over at Ars Technica. He says Android game console has become as he says that I've rarely seen a product category come out of nowhere to get so hot so quickly. Companies that don't want to get left behind should jump on this trend now before the Android game console becomes as dated as the social gaming platform. So it's just kind of like the equivalent of a fashion accessory in games making. And I can see Amazon trying it, though. If everybody's trying it, Amazon's got an app store and they want to sell apps. That's what they want to do. They want to sell you content. I suppose this makes sense. You know what also makes sense? Piracy. Wait, what? Yeah, actually, Time Warner CEO says it's actually very complimentary. He said it before, but his rhetoric gets crazier every time, Sarah.
Yeah, this is actually somewhat of a popular sentiment as it applies to Game of Thrones, which, as some people know, is widely pirated. In fact, very, very widely pirated in Australia. Game of Thrones director David Petrarca has said in the past, unauthorized downloads were great because they added to the cultural buzz for the show. He probably, under pressure, has backtracked and then went on record as saying, I am 100% opposed to piracy. But it still helps our show. And, in the vein of Australia, U.S. Ambassador to Australia, Jeffrey Blake, has said on record, stopping infringement of Game of Thrones is a major priority. Okay, so we're all in agreement that Game of Thrones is highly pirated. Time Warner CEO Jeff Bewkes said on the company's latest earnings call specifically about Game of Thrones, if you go to people who are watching it without subs, without subscriptions to HBO, it's a tremendous word of mouth thing. We've been dealing with this for 20, 30 years. People sharing subs, running wires down the back of apartment buildings. Our experience is that it leads to more paying subs. I think you're right that Game of Thrones is the most pirated show in the world. That's better than an Emmy. Now, you might say, oh, I don't know. I mean, is he crazy? Word of mouth virally does not necessarily translate to better ratings. We talked about this, on Twitter. How much does word of mouth on Twitter contribute to Nielsen ratings, for example? Well, Time Warner Cable, they had a really good earnings report. Their earnings were up significantly. Revenue at $7.74 billion. So maybe Bewkes knows what he's talking about here. I certainly think if you're comparing it to something like an Emmy, word of mouth probably is a bigger deal. But I wonder how much, at what point does this reverse the way that we all consume HBO content? People pirate HBO content because in many ways there's no a la carte programming available. So the executives kind of say, well, everybody's talking about it. Do we think that it really is translated into more subs?
The piracy or the Emmys?
The piracy.
I would think piracy because if you get a low quality version of a show, even if you have the HD versions of it, it's still compressed, and you might actually go out and buy the Blu-ray, you might buy the DVD, or you might try to get it some legitimate way. It's kind of like when Napster was around, and if you listen to a band enough, you're like, they're really good. I'm actually going to pay because I like this band. Mm-hmm. And start doing that. So maybe it's nice. It's not the best thing monetarily up front to have these shows pirated, but in the long run, maybe it generates more money for the company in general, or at least the production company. It's just, I'm just sure that HBO is just like, this is not funny. We don't want to see this kind of statement up there. And Emmy, though, that's the other thing that's on the box, like Emmy Award winning show. So that's the other thing that sells the actual content.
Hulu, do you think that this puts us more in the direction of a la carte programming finally being offered by cable companies, or more people reluctantly buying HBO subscriptions because they want that one show?
Well, this more than any, I agree with everything that industry executives said, and but this more than anything is a wake up call for HBO. I don't really understand why HBO doesn't offer access to its content independent of cable subscriptions. That's one of the big things that's keeping me from cutting the cord. If HBO let me use the HBO Go app without having a Comcast subscription, I totally go for that. That's the one thing that pops into my head when I hear all of this. All that other stuff is kind of secondary.
The argument for HBO not providing a direct subscription right now is that they would lose money. They would make less money on it. The reason being is because they get so much free marketing from the cable operators right now, that giving up that, because if they start offering a direct to the consumer internet version of HBO, those cable companies will not support them with free marketing anymore. That's just the way the game is played. And so they don't want to give that up. They couldn't make up the difference there, and they would lose subscriptions because of that. But what's curious to me, and I, as you kind of touched on it, HBO can't be happy with Books saying this, but Books is in charge of them. He's the CEO of the company that does HBO. So maybe they are happy. I still haven't figured out what his game is here, because he never endorses piracy. He says, yeah, it's wrong. We're going to continue to pursue it. But then he says, but it's a big compliment. That is a change of rhetoric. Most industry spokespeople have been no compromise, piracy always wrong. We're never going to say a nice thing about it. So is he trying to appear friendly to the folks when the economics shift to the point where it does make sense to provide that internet-only version in the United States? And they definitely are indicating they want to do it. They've got a version of this in Scandinavia already. They're trying different things around the world. When they get to that point, do they want people to remember them fondly for saying like, oh, well, those are the guys who admitted that piracy is a compliment? I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. Finally, the Netflix way could apply to music sales. This is kind of an interesting NextWeb article, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like a thought piece here. The NextWeb has an article asking the question, should RDO and Spotify launch their own labels for exclusive music? Now, NextWeb is citing the example of Netflix and how its exclusive content gets subscribers for the company. And so far, streaming radio seems to have just a bunch of players, but there's no real clear leader. You got Microsoft, Google, Sony, Spotify, RDO, all have very similar offerings. You got apps on Android and iOS. You've got desktop components. Some have web, some don't. Social elements, discovery features. So they're all kind of the same at this point. And the thing is, if Spotify and RDO created its own label, they would be able to own their own exclusive rights to the artist, and that would give them a lot more ability to have these artists available on their services only. Another differentiator in the whole services industry. The companies could even license the artist's music to other services if they wanted to. And the NextWeb just thinks, though, a niche work won't cut it. So if you're talking about a really high concept musician, might not be the way to go. They even said they need breakout stars like Justin Bieber for it to be a success. Let's actually answer the question. Should RDO and Spotify launch their own labels for exclusive music? Sarah, I know you use RDO.
I do, but I hate the idea of an artist being exclusive to something that might not be my preferred method of listening to music in a year or 2 years. I understand comparing it to something like Netflix, and I think that we're all sort of surprised and delighted by some of the original content on Netflix. It's like, oh, I've, there's a couple series now where I'm like, this is awesome. I have a Netflix subscription and we're good to go. But music, I don't know. It's something about that just sort of scares me, especially since the subscription model for music is really, really new. They're still trying to figure out how to make artists happy and consumers happy and be able to not charge people too much, but just enough so that you have music that is delivered on a variety of devices, depending on where you are. But I don't know. I don't know how this would really help the artist. It's kind of like, you know, Howard Stern going to, what, Sirius Radio? And then it's mm-hmm. like, oh, just lots of people now can't listen.
I look at this and I see the pressure on Netflix was we can't get all of the shows we want. It's not like music. In music, yeah. all of these services can get access to all the major catalogs for the most part. There's not a big problem with that. With Netflix, it's like, well, you can't have that show or you can have this movie for a short period of time, but then you have to give it up. And you have that whole windowing system. So there's pressure on Netflix to make original content. There's not pressure on the music services to make original content. So I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison.
Julie, what do you make of this? Should these companies be looking into their own artists?
Well, I kind of agree with everything Sarah said, but I also think that the music industry is ripe for another round of disruption. I think we should try a lot of new things. I think the whole industry has stagnated a bit since Steve Jobs kind of shook it up, and I think I want to see innovation, online innovation again, and not keep doing all the stuff that we've been doing. So I say, why not? I say, go for it.
And one of the things I'm running into is the comparison between Netflix and music is that television and that kind of media library can be great and you can view it again over and over again in the long run. Music seems to be kind of a timely thing. You know, if people are listening to a certain hit right now, everyone kind of knows a song. It's on the radio all the time. You go, oh, that's the summer anthem this year. That's great. Let's move on to the next song. But if you're stuck on just one streaming radio station, you might never hear that anywhere else. So if you have this artist that's really fantastic and has crossover appeal, you're going to need to be available on more than just one station. They have to get this musician on the public radio. They need to have him on Vevo. They need to be everywhere. So even if they have their own label, they'd have to operate the same. So then you'd be able to get the content pretty much everywhere again. So I don't know if that's actually going to work for music.
Yeah, I feel like music is it's all about, hey, have you heard that song? You want that? You want it to be playing all over the place so that it gets in your head. It's different than, you know, something like Game of Thrones where it's like, ooh, it's kind of cool because it's, you know, only exclusive, available to certain kind of people. And ooh, let's pirate it. I think music, I don't think artists benefit from choosing a platform and going with it unless there's just so much money involved that they can't say no.
Well, just the contrarian side of this, I know people are going to say, well, a lot of music you want to have that's old, right? That's why classic rock stations exist. But you're right. If you want to get a hit out of a new music, you need to get it in everybody's minds. And the other thing I would think about is maybe it would make sense for RDO to sign the artist directly so the artists make more money. The labels aren't taking it, but they absolutely, I think we all agree, should license that music out to other services. And they could get the benefit of saying, hey, we have it first. We get exclusive access to it for a limited period of time before it goes to the other services. Once it gets popular, they're going to make money off the other services too. So maybe that does make sense. I don't know.
And the other point is artists, in some cases, have been very successful in getting their product out themselves. Lady Gaga and so on. And I see scenarios where artists could continue to do this, but perhaps with assistance or alliances with some of these services.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. A tight, tight straw poll going on right now. When wearable tech makes you smarter, and a sort of an electrode thing that you put on your head, remorseful burglars return stolen computers to a sexual assault center, and Air Sleep for iPhone drowns out noise with ambient sound to help you sleep. Nobody cared about Air Sleep. But wow, 49% for wearable tech that makes you smarter, 43% for remorseful burglars. So just barely. We're going to talk about this crazy thing that it's attached to your head and uses electroshocks to make you work. Now, the craziest thing is that the scientists all pretty much agree that it works, that having like low frequency, these are very low amounts of power shocking your prefrontal cortex will improve your focus, will improve your ability to think in lots of situations. But what everyone's concerned about is if somebody's got this and they can wear it on their head and do it all the time, what are the long-term effects of that?
Years off of your life, low-grade stress that never stops.
But you're very focused during that shortened mm-hmm. life, Right.
So you get more done. Your legacy is stronger.
Potentially.
Even though you die at 62.
And then you have I'm sure the privacy concerns of what if somebody hacks my headgear and they're just constantly trying to irritate me. I mean, that could be a real issue.
It does have Bluetooth. That's why I had to go through the FCC.
It's like sounds. You know, dogs and women sometimes can hear a frequency that men can't. Mm-hmm. You know, something that's supposed to be zapping you. It's very, you know, subtle. You know, for some person, it might just be like, migraine inducing. I'm ruined.
Maybe it could give more positive reinforcement, like just release endorphins. You're like, oh, that's good. I should be focusing right now, as opposed to going like, no, bad, bad.
Well, it's not that kind of shock. It's not something you feel. It's not a punitive thing.
Oh, okay.
It's just stimulating the electrical current in your brain.
And that part's not controversial.
No, the science is pretty good on that. But that's all in the lab. Nobody knows what it's like if you say, hey, you're video game teenager, go put this on your head and play video games for 8 hours and try to use it to improve your focus.
I think the curiosity is, are you going to wear Google Glass with your headgear and your Bluetooth headset? That's my question. How much stuff will you wear on your face?
Yeah. That's the other thing, is how lovely this looks as an accessory. I think we'll all be wearing them soon. We'll just buy fake ones if we can't afford the real ones, because it's so darn fashionable.
The first thing that popped into my head was Brainiac. You can look exactly like Brainiac from the 1970s.
Yes. There you go. Cosplay. Perfect cosplay opportunity right there. Let's move on to the calendar, Sarah.
All right, let's do it. The new Nexus 7 is headed to the UK starting on August 28th, priced at £199. And Google Wallet is removing support for gifts and loyalty cards. So if you've got a balance, you should get rid of that by August 21st. Google says presents are the way of the past, not the future.
That's right.
They didn't really say that.
Christmas. No, they didn't do that either. No. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Christopher in Portland. He says, you were mentioning in episode 813 about the price cut of the Ubuntu Edge phone. Everyone had great points and what could be done to make or break this phone. Unfortunately, two things that were not discussed that I believe have been a major factor in whether a smartphone becomes dominant or not: developers and apps. Take, for example, BlackBerry Z10. A decent phone, decent specs, few apps, few interested. I'm sure the Ubuntu phone could borrow from the Google Play Store, but if they did that, they'd really be blurring the lines of differentiating themselves from another Android phone. With a price tag of around $600 unsubsidized, you are really, really limiting yourself to the Linux faithful, and to survive in a fiercely competitive smartphone market, you have to reach out beyond a base like that. Just my thoughts. Really enjoy the show. Oh, and a quick note to Len Peralta. You rock. Keep coming back.
Aw, hear that, Len?
That's nice. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks you so
Christopher.
Much.
And a thoughtful email. Thanks for sending that, Christopher. I think that's one of the advantages Ubuntu thinks they have, is we've got this big app store and it'll be easy to take all these apps over, because people don't realize the amount of apps that are created for Linux. And that right there is the rub. They don't realize the number of apps. And so they're going to think exactly like Christopher's saying, like, oh, I don't think there's any apps in that store, even though there are. There are at least more than you think.
Got another email from Renard, who says, about your discussion about the Xbox, as an entertainment consumer and trying to decide if I want a PS4 or an Xbox, there's one key difference in price. With Xbox touting that they want to be the all-in-one entertainment box in your living room, the non-gamer is not excited about paying extra money to do the non-gaming thing. For the gamer, it's no big deal to them because they're going to pay for it anyway. The point is that you can't claim all-in-one box for entertainment, but then only cater to gamers.
All right. Thank you, Renard. And thank you, Julio Ojeda Zapata, for joining us today. Great having you on the show. Let folks know what you've been up to. What's going on? St. Paul Pioneer Press. You got any independent projects you want to mention? What's happening with Julio?
Yeah, actually, I'm working on a book that's going to be out before the end of the year about writing. If you write and want to do so effectively and comfortably on mobile devices, iPads, Chromebooks, whatever, I'm writing a how-to book that sort of walks you through all the software, all the accessories, all the services. It's sort of in its final stages, and you'll be hearing more about that later.
Excellent. Check it out, yourtechweblog.com, to follow Julio. And Len Peralta, let's check in and see what you've been drawing during this show. You got some great stuff today.
Thank you. These are pretty interesting ones. The first one, the story about LavaBit being taken down, I sort of took that, you know, more, you know, personalizing Lav a bit here, where he's holding on to the noose and saying goodbye, cruel world. Very, very sad. Probably one of the saddest things I've drawn.
Lavabit logo. Yeah.
Yeah, very sad. This is BlackBerry. Yes, it is very dark. I don't know what's going on with me. BlackBerry going private. Guy's saying, hey, BlackBerry, it's mine, all mine. And he says, I don't get you get the concept of going private. Kimi, you know, I thought, is this the untimely end of Rock Heideki? He's saying, well,
Skyball will never be the same.
I'm done, says Rock Heideki, but I don't think it is, honestly. After hearing the story, I don't think that is the untimely end of Rock Heideki. The Amazon controller, pretty simple, scroll and then order. Only two-button controller. Very, very simple stuff.
Oh, I get it.
I love it.
Click.
Yeah.
You know, Game of Thrones, I think, deserves a new house. House Buccaneer here, and their tagline is "Stealing TV is better than an Emmy."
Their house motto.
House motto. House Buccaneer. And finally, should Spotify and RDO offer original content? I personally think they should, and here's what I think. Iaz sings, and the album is called "Songs to Send Email By." I think this is the future of Spotify. And as a Spotify subscriber, I'm sticking until that album comes out.
All auto-tuned all day.
See, Sarah and I are hoping it comes to RDO.
I'm going to cancel Spotify if that happens.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Len Peralta. Peraltartsy.myshopify.com. You can also find them at bit.ly/twitlen. Excellent stuff, Len, as always. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
And, of course, don't forget, you can find a link to his art right at the top of our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's also where you can submit stories for consideration in our lineup each and every day. If you like something that happened anytime during the show, any time of week, on any show on the Twit Network, go to twit.tv/bestof and let us know as much about that clip as possible so we can make sure it ends up in our best of shows at the end of the year. We're actually getting just 4 months away from those shows airing.
That's crazy.
It's almost like time continues to move.
Wait a minute.
Twit.tv/bestof. I know. That is it for the week. Thank you all for joining us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with an all-new show. And Dan Benjamin from 5x5 is our guest. See you then.